Welcome to FemLead, the podcast on female leadership and role models. This show aims to inspire and equip you with the tools you need to navigate your career plans. FemLead brings inspiring career perspectives and strategies to guide your path to success. Your host, Alexandra, will interview role models on new exciting topics with each episode. If you like what you hear, give us a review and subscribe to the show on your preferred streaming platform. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of FemLead. I know you have been expecting this one, as we agreed to share more insights on and tackle this very, very important topic together. So today we discuss the imposter syndrome. Yes, we are discussing this topic with a very, very special guest. My next guest is a cybersecurity expert and thought leader. She gained worldwide attention for her thought leadership in the human element of cybersecurity while successfully training over 3,000 people on the fundamentals of cybersecurity. Likewise, she has many accreditations and has successfully contributed to the cybersecurity world. It is hard for me to share all of those here, but what I can share is that her personal mission is to protect organizations from cybercrime caused by external or internal threat actors. She is a guest on many podcasts and shows and contributed to thought leadership about the human aspect of cybersecurity in many, many conferences. Without further ado, please welcome Joy Bellon, our guest for the day. Welcome, Joy. It's such a pleasure to have you join us. Thank you so much for accepting this invitation.
Alexandra, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to connect with you and your audience.
So Joy and I have been connected through a common member of our network and a friend. And Joy joined us today to talk a bit about her work and the human element of cybersecurity that I think it's a very, very interesting topic. But the main topic of our discussion will be the imposter syndrome that Joy actually did some research on and has had some experience, like all of us feeling it, but also tackling it and thinking about how can we pass this feeling of not belonging to a certain place. But we'll deep dive into that very, very soon. I would love to tell us a bit about what does it mean to work with the human element of cybersecurity, because you have a very impressive career in cybersecurity. Can you introduce us to the topic and what exactly does it mean to tackle the human element of cybersecurity?
You bet. For 21 years, I had my own business and my role was to support and provide infrastructure services for small businesses. So any computer needs that they had, whether it was installing a new server, a new firewall, new desktops for them, teaching them on their productivity software, myself and my team would be doing that. And back in 2014, we had our first client that was hit with ransomware, and it was on his home computer, not on his business network. But in that early stage of ransomware, I realized that the cleanup needed in order to get that one system whole again, it was like 8 business days and $2,000. And I realized if that happened at one of my client networks where it traveled through the business network and brought that whole business to a screeching halt, what would that mean financially for them and for my business in providing their support services? The other thing that became really apparent to me is that ransomware and a lot of the threats that were evolving at that time were dependent on a human being clicking on something or agreeing to do something that they thought was legitimate. And that no matter what I would be installing on the computer network or the computer itself to help prevent that threat from taking hold, all it would take is one click from one of those users to bypass or undo the technology that I was putting in place. So the human element is a form of cybersecurity I discovered at the RSA conference in the United States back in 2014 or 2015, when I was walking around amongst a whole bunch of cybersecurity professionals, and there was this one specific tract of cybersecurity focus on the human beings and how it is that you can basically uncover and influence human behavior for them to look at their computers and all of technology in a different light, rather than being so trusting and relying on the technology part to protect them, to start to influence what is motivating them and how to educate them to look at their computers as basically a weapon, that they need to understand how to wield this weapon in order to protect the organization and their own personal data in a completely different way. So that's when I really started to focus in on human influence, human behavior, and with everything that we're learning around cybersecurity, how do we actually cement that in the right way so that all of the technology is being used wisely, because the people who are using that technology understand and are motivated to behave in a different way.
That's very interesting. And my first thought when you started explaining how you put two and two together is, right, how did you make that switch from working for 20 more years with different stakeholders to actually focusing on the human element? I'm very curious about this thought process.
So it was really out of necessity for there to be a voice for the small businesses. At the time, there was the FBI and the Secret Service Cyber Crimes Division working closely with the business owners in Los Angeles that were like, well, not with business owners. They were working with enterprise level organizations, the big guys. What they wanted to do is protect the really large companies from having any kind of breach. And I noticed that there was nothing that they were generating in the way of helping small businesses. And that was my constituents. I had a small business myself. I realized that they weren't speaking the same language. There's a different, you know, when you have an enterprise level company, you have governance, risk, and compliance built in over many years, that those stakeholders are going to look at what are their risks and how do we govern and properly educate our stakeholders in a way that's meaningful. Nobody was having that conversation with small businesses. So it was self-preservation for myself and my small businesses that I was learning to speak this different language. And I also felt that I couldn't be in integrity if I was going to be selling tools and solutions to those small businesses that many of them had been with me for 10 or 20 years. I can't just sell them a solution knowing I'm not giving them the whole picture. And so the education piece of it to me was just stepping into integrity and really understanding what's the best way I can be of service to this organization, to this whole community that has supported me and my business for so many years. It just didn't feel right to not dive into that human element piece of it and do everything I could to uphold and sustain the way that they were thinking about it, to help match the investment that they were making in the tools and the solutions.
Well, it's very impressive. And I'm honestly honored to talk about this subject with you, because you really speak for an entire industry of small businesses, and you kind of found that thread in a larger story where you say, okay, it is not enough help for this part of the ecosystem. I'm going to come in and I'm going to help them. How beautiful is that? Thank you so much for covering that. I feel we already got a very important piece of advice and lesson from you, and that is that if you really want to create impact, you can start with yourself and with the community that you can build around you. That's very beautiful, Joy. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the imposter syndrome, you've done some research on it, and you know, as part of your training and part of the human element aspect of your work, you also talk a lot about the imposter syndrome. And I was wondering if you can define it for us, tell us what does it mean, and give us a bit more insights into why is it that now we speak more about imposter syndrome than maybe we did before?
Well, the definition that I have come to really embrace, because there's many different ways of looking at it, but it's the inability to internalize success. So no matter how well and successful I might do something over and over, to be called an expert in that or to be asked to continue to deliver higher levels of that same expertise becomes over time something that I doubt more and more that I truly have that success. It's almost like I feel as if you were to uncover all the different layers of how I got here and why people would refer to me as an expert, that in that accounting process, you would say, oh no, well, you're not actually qualified to be referred to as an expert in this. And that's what most people who have imposter syndrome identify with the most, is that it's almost like I'm a fraud for being here. If you really knew all of my background, you would say she's not qualified to be in the seat that she's in. And imposter syndrome for me started when I really dove into the human element in cybersecurity. I had had some misgivings about whether or not I belonged in IT for many years leading up to that, simply because I was a woman. And I was in, you know, my very first conference in 2008 was 600 men and me. And I looked around that room and I didn't feel necessarily intimidated, like, oh no, I'm the only woman. But I did feel like a little bit of an outsider in things. You know, I wanted to get in there in those conversations, but it just felt a little bit harder for me to fit in. And so what happened as I continued to develop expertise in the human element of cybersecurity, more and more people were referring to me as an expert. I leveraged that because I found that I was able to gain an audience with more and more small businesses if the name expert was attached to, or if the title of an expert was attached to what I was doing. And I'd say, you know, I'll be doing a lunch and learn for free. And if the expert in cybersecurity was attached to my name and my title, more people would show up. So I really embraced that. But over time, the human element of cybersecurity, I started to feel as if it was harder to maintain that expertise title in my own mind, even though I truly was in the small business sector, because what would happen is other people would come to me and say, oh, you're a cybersecurity expert. And they would ask a much more advanced question in a different area of cybersecurity that I wasn't familiar with. And rather than me understanding and embracing, there's a million different sectors of cybersecurity where one could actually never know the most compared to everybody else, you know, and so I would be a little bit feel undeserving of the title of expert in any given area, because there's just so much to know. And that's one of the things about cybersecurity. And I think why it is becoming more, thank goodness, more common for people to talk about imposter syndrome, is that you never know everything. Nobody will ever know everything. There's a million people out there trying to learn exactly the same things you are and apply it in exactly the same ways. That's what it feels like. Although one of the things I've come to really embrace about this process is that they don't have that windy road that got me to where I'm at, with all of that varied experience that gives my perspective just a slightly different lean than anybody else's. And so the imposter syndrome, the other thing I wanted to throw in for this is that the word syndrome is kind of denotes a, like some kind of a mental disorder or a mental inability to behave normal on a permanent basis. And I think a lot of people now are looking at imposter syndrome and feeling that maybe imposter experience or imposter phenomenon would be a more suitable description, because it's transient. It's not something that myself or most people that I know feel on a constant basis. It just creeps up once in a while, and then that voice kind of dissipates. You get through that and you go on to the next thing. And then at some point later, it creeps up again. It's very transient. And thank goodness for myself and the people who talk about it more and more often, it's less frequent. And so syndrome, maybe not so much. Experience, phenomenon might be a more suitable name for it.
I love that you mentioned that, because one of our former podcast guests, Purnima, she also tackled for a very short period of time in our interview about the mindset, the imposter feeling. And she mentioned the idea that, like you just said, syndrome sounds almost as if there will be some sort of disease related to the feeling that you are experiencing at certain times during your life, or in just a period of time because of stress or because of the setup that you are in, and that we shouldn't link that to the way that we live our lives or the way our lives can progress.
Yes.
And for me, that was a very good interpretation as well. I love the fact that you also mentioned it now, because we can see that more thought leaders consider that imposter syndrome is maybe the wrong way to address what we are feeling. And on that note, I wanted to ask you, what do you think the imposter phenomenon has when it creates when it comes to barriers for growth? Because you are a person that it's obviously very aware of their potential. And even you said that you experience the imposter feeling or phenomenon. When did you feel this most acute, and what did you do about it? Because I feel that there are people who might dwell into this feeling longer and they don't know what to do. And I feel like if you share a bit more of your experience personally, how did it affect you? When did you feel it more acute and what did you do? It will really give listeners a better understanding of, you know, how can it manifest and what can you do to tackle this?
So it became very acute for me in 2020, when I was let go right in the middle of COVID with a whole bunch of people at the company that I worked for. And I thought, well, I'm in cybersecurity. I'm in one of the most emerging and important areas of cybersecurity with the human element and security culture. I have a lot of these cybersecurity credentials, great experience, really great references. And honestly, I wasn't worried. That was in July of 2020. And what happened is I went through a process over a span of 6 months searching for a job, where it started out being having tons of conversations and interviews and really feeling at the top of my game. And like I was going to have a huge selection of jobs that I could choose from. And COVID did not pan out that way for myself and for many other people, that each time that I was getting really close to, signing the dotted line, getting down to the actual offer agreement for these different cybersecurity positions, they would come back and say, I just am not allowed to pull the trigger. I thought I could. I wouldn't have spent this much time with you. Or they would completely ghost me. And for myself, after about 4 months in this 6 month period, I hit this point where my head was telling me, you are not the expert that you thought you were. You don't have the value. You don't have, you know, these credentials are something that doesn't represent what you think it does. And that imposter syndrome just brought me to my knees. I was in complete despair and feeling as if there all along I had been a fraud and now everybody knows. And I'll tell you, it's almost like being the hardest thing I've ever been through. Anybody that's in this position or has experienced this, my hope for them is that what happened to me will happen for them. It was the biggest blessing of my life, because what happened is it dismantled my entire belief system about what am I placing value on and what's important to me. And it was a pivotal point in my life where I basically got back off my knees and said, well, if I have to reinvent myself, if I have to look at what brings me true joy and where do I go from here at ground zero, then I'm going to do everything I can to come into joy 2.0 that's going to be the best version that she can possibly be. And I placed incredible value and emphasis on building relationships and on what brings fulfillment to me. And in that process, I really learned about, you know, all the times looking back in my life, where was I the most fulfilled? And honestly, Alexandra, I understood for the first time, it was when I pushed myself way outside of my comfort zone and had like such a huge goal that I was nervous as could be and walking through that imposter syndrome thinking, oh my God, I don't know if I can actually do this. And I look back at that pattern of where I was most fulfilled and like vaulted to that next level. And every time it was walking through imposter syndrome. every time it was pushing myself so much outside of that comfort zone that I was like a shaky, nervous wreck. And on the other side of it, I would look back and go, okay, that actually wasn't so bad. And I started to develop this new, I don't know if it's a persona, but a new understanding of myself that I was a lot tougher than I ever gave myself credit for. And in that dismantling, everything just opened up for me. And I really started to understand what is this imposter syndrome. And Dr. Jessica Barker was a huge influence for me. She has this YouTube video. She specializes in IT and cybersecurity and culture. And she did a video on imposter syndrome. And then I read this book by Stephen Kotler, who I've been a fan of for years, but he specializes in flow. How do we achieve a state of flow? And there are some really gnarly pushing yourself out of the time, out of your comfort zone with a time sensitivity and a goal in mind and a sense of mission and all of this information that I was like knee deep in at the time started to just click into place. And it was like the DNA of joy, the puzzle that is me started to lock into place. And I became super excited and inspired and just knew whatever I did moving forward, I had my non-negotiables. And one of those things was going to be, I'm going to continue to push myself and experience the imposter phenomenon because that's a really good, healthy thing. And other people needed to know about this.
Would you say then that there is also a good part of experiencing the imposter phenomenon? Of course, looking at your career and at this very important moment of reflection for you that you now call a blessing, which really feels like an epiphany. And it feels like it was really what you needed to experience in order to really become who you're supposed to become, because the joy that I met, it's exactly like that. So I'm very happy that that now I have some context to it. But do you think there is a good part of experiencing the imposter feeling?
All of it is good. And it took me a long time to understand that and really get it. I think that as someone who's experiencing it, that debilitating fear, that like crisis of the soul where am I a big fraud? You know, am I out there representing myself as something that I'm clearly not? What I would invite them to do is look at their history of when they felt that and to relate that to here's my comfort zone and here is where I was forcing myself to go at the time. And understanding it for myself, at least, I was choosing to go there each time. I was putting myself in that position. You know, it's, I could have said no. I could have not given myself the exposure and the notoriety where people would call upon me to do those next things and those next things. I could have absolutely backed out of it, but I didn't. And so each time that I chose to put my foot way outside of that little, you know, circle of comfort and step into that next thing, I had to understand, number one, it was my choice. Number two, it was always healthy and amazing for me because it drove me to a new level of up-leveling my skills, you know, that research and that over and over in my head until I really feel like this is something I can represent with integrity. Each time I was stepping into a role so much bigger than I felt comfortable with and gaining that experience to look back and go, oh, I did it. It's like that ladder rung feels like it's just too heavy. Like I can't even get my leg there every time. But now I know that. Now I have the tools, like, you know, that voice in my head that says, you're a fraud, you can't do this. Now I have these tools that I can turn around and actually catch myself when that voice comes up and say, no, I feel like a fraud. That doesn't mean I am a fraud. I feel like a fraud because I am putting myself in a position of going outside my comfort zone and good things always come when I do this. And turning that internal voice into one that empowers me and has empathy for that scared part of me. You know, I think that empathy is a superpower. And the more that I have empathy to myself, to that scared little girl inside thinking everyone's going to call me a fake, you know, the more that I'm able to do that, the more powerful I am in turning that fear into something that is just going to propel me to the next level.
Wow. You said many, many important facts and pieces of advice that you've experienced. And I think that the next natural question I feel any listener will now ask themselves is, how can I use those tools? So can you give us an understanding of what tools exactly did you use? Obviously, this can go very deep because it's a personal journey. But as a general understanding, you talked a bit about the reflection, you talked about internal voices, you talked about changing fear into empowerment. What do you recommend people that listen and they really feel, okay, I'm experiencing this, I don't know how to deal with it. I feel like I could probably try something, but it's not going to last until tomorrow. What do you tell people that actually they don't know where to start this journey in a way that will actually be impactful and not just the one afternoon exercise of let's write something down on the paper and see when it was true or not true, you know? Mm-hmm. What do you recommend people?
You actually said the most important thing is that it's not a one afternoon kind of a thing. It's a journey. And so first of all, embrace that there's a journey. I used many different tools, and in looking back at them, I saw how each of them impacted me so deeply during this time of just tremendous upheaval. The first is that I've always had deep and abiding faith. And in whatever form that means for you, I would encourage anybody that is listening to this, that it's resonating with them, to explore that so that that is something that becomes foundational. But as part of that, it took me on a journey to understanding that voice in my head. Like for me, there's a book called Untethered Soul by Michael Singer that really helped me to wake up to the narrator, this like director in a director's chair that's sitting in my head and wanting to tell me what my experience is of any given thing, not just now in the present moment, but it wants to tell me, oh no, what's coming down the pike, what's certainly going to be happening in the future. And it wants to rehash everything that was happening yesterday and, you know, 5 years ago or 20 years ago and build a case for why I should be fearful. And that voice, you know, its purpose is to protect me. I think there's only like 2 or 3% of the population of the world that don't have that experience of that narrator. And the thing is, it's not my friend. And so understanding, number one, recognizing when that voice is starting to do that talking and just be able to quiet it down, meditation, reframing what that voice is saying to me, that's where the empathy comes in, where I can acknowledge, oh, this is fear or this is anxiety. And my narrator needs to just quiet down for a bit because the truth is not what those words are. The truth is that I have always been supported and held by this universe. Another tool that I still do that I find extremely valuable is working with somebody who understands emotional intelligence, because my friend Antisa, who's also your friend, Antisa Jensen, was powerful in helping me to deconstruct some of what that voice has been telling me over the years, and then what the truth of that voice really needs to be, and stand in that, like stand in a powerful way where I feel that this new foundation that I'm on is unwavering, right? And then Stephen Kotler's book, The Art of Impossible, to discover flow. I think that for me, one of the biggest things I learned in my adult life just like 3 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago, is that the way that I've been trying to educate myself, the just learning in general, was all wrong. I was looking at cybersecurity knowledge and at a lot of different kinds of business transformation and organizational learning as almost homework. Like, I have to go read this, because I knew that I needed the knowledge and that it was good for me and it was going to be good. And I continued to do that. I got those cybersecurity certifications and all of the knowledge that I needed to, but I dreaded it like homework instead of understanding how I learn can be completely different. And that was a huge eye opener. Like, you know, I have this this daily planner where I write notes about everything that I'm doing on a constant basis, because my brain translates and retains things by handwriting it so much better. I can't read a digital book and absorb it in the way that I do a book that is actually on paper. Like, if I get out my highlighter and my pen and, God bless me, stickers, I have so much fun digesting and learning and relating what's in front of me to all of the different, like, I call them like pods. I have about 8 areas that I'm just truly passionate and have a sense of mission behind in cybersecurity and in my life. And as I'm writing or reading or listening to a podcast, I pull out one of those pods that this knowledge relates to, and I add more notes and more context to it. And what I understood is that is my DNA. So the way that I was learning, how I was capturing it, and then how I put those pieces into their rightful places in my life and understood, oh, well, these 8 pods that I have are actually, this is Joy's DNA. And those pods don't have to make sense or link together for anybody else. I am who I am just so uniquely. And instead of that being something that I'm like, well, nobody else likes or understands the human element in cybersecurity. There's a lot of tech geeks out there that really poo-poo the human side of cybersecurity. It's not important to me whether it ever makes sense for them and how that relates to my sense of mission in patriotism, or my sense of wanting to influence human behavior and company culture and organizational culture. None of that has to fit together for anybody else. As long as I understand and embrace that this is me and I'm going for it, I am so much happier. So those are some of the resources and tools that I've used that have really helped me to step into who I'm meant to be now. I'm so grateful for every one of those.
This is fantastic. Thank you so much, Joy, for covering it. When it comes to the confidence that you now exude talking about your journey, what do you think, very briefly, on the topic of self-doubt versus confidence? How can we foster this in women listening that feel like maybe I'm the odd one out because there are not many people like me in this organization? Do you have any thoughts on how people can really be okay with whatever happens? Because I feel that's also maybe not easy for some people to simply show up as their best selves.
So I think that if I were to look back at all of those failures that I have had, so many failures or so many like regretful, oh my God, I can't believe I said this or did that. Each one of them has taught me so much. And I think that's one of the keys is being able to take those failures and look at what I learned from them and understand how much more value that has added to my journey and my story. The other thing is that there's this quote I call it the arena. Theodore Roosevelt has this amazing quote that I discovered through listening to a podcast from Brené Brown did a podcast where she talks about it. It wasn't even a podcast. It was a TED Talk where she talks about the arena. And it's about the fact that at least I'm in the arena. Like, I don't have to be the gladiator in the arena. I can be one of the people sitting in that audience, pointing my fingers, jeering at them and saying everything that they're doing wrong. Or I can go get the crap beat out of me in the arena, but I'm in the arena. I'm fighting the fight. I'm pushing myself way out of the comfort zone. I'm willing to be the one that has all eyes on them, trying to do something better, trying to take what my mission is insecure people and get through this phase of our human experience where we can no longer trust everybody we meet. You know, we want to do that as humans. We want to be trusting. We want to expect the best out of people. And we're in this phase with our technology and with what's happening in cybersecurity, where people have to be cautious and they have to second guess and question the validity of the simplest things. And it's one of those things that can just tear apart our souls and cause distrust in human nature, or we can lead this the right way and use this as a good way of learning about how are we influencing, allowing ourselves to be influenced as human beings, and what do we stand for as our mission for being. So I'm folding all of that into the arena and saying, you know what? Every one of those failures has led me to understand how I can help people not fail. Every one of the wins that I have helps me to have a stronger voice for good. And I just need to keep putting that one foot in front of the other. That's the only thing that I'm tasked to do, is trust in God and keep putting one foot in front of the other, and everything will be okay.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Joy. This has been a fantastic conversation about a topic that many, many people want to tackle, and maybe they don't know where to start. So now Joy shared with us some specific tools and also more about her journey of discovering and moving forward in her life. And, you know, feeling true to ourselves is key to that. And I want to thank you, Joy, for taking the time. I know we're almost done, and I want to go directly to the final five fire questions, where Joy will share some very fast pieces of advice and recommendations for all of you to check out. So Joy, what is one book you think everyone should read?
The Art of Impossible by Stephen Kotler with a K. It will help you understand your sense of mission and different ways of learning, like I just discussed, to help you to understand how amazing it is to put yourself, and easy to put yourself, into flow and really enjoy your life so much more.
Thank you. What is the best piece of advice you have ever received?
Ever is, and it's not a pretty thing to say, but the best advice I ever received is, when somebody is down, when they fall down, stick out my hand, help them get up. Don't ever mention what I saw or wished or felt behind how they were treating me. Just to be the bigger person, because that kind of loyalty and respect pays itself tenfold with the universe and with karma. So never call somebody out for doing something wrong. Instead, just help them in doing the right.
Beautiful. Who is your role model? Shani Delaney. Okay.
Shani Delaney. If you look her up on LinkedIn, she's one of the foremost experts on insider threat in the world. And I met her during one of my lowest times when I was going through that in COVID. And she has more empathy and love and smarts and genuine humility than any woman I've met in my professional career.
Wow, beautiful. If you were to have another career, what would you choose to do?
Another career? I would probably... So I don't have children myself, and I think that what I would choose to do would be something in helping, maybe not children, but teenage girls who are going through just such an awkward self-esteem phase, especially if they're from underprivileged families, to be able to have them see what really is important and help them to mold their self-esteem in the healthiest of ways.
That's very beautiful. And lastly, if you could change places with someone, who would it be and why?
It would probably be somebody that is working in a third world country on the front lines of poverty and despair.
Thank you. Beautiful, Joy. Thank you so much for tuning in, doing this recording with us. I'll make sure to share your contact info for people to also reach out if they want to ask Joy anything and, you know, follow her amazing work. I really want to thank you for tuning in and joining us today. And wish you a very, very beautiful journey moving forward.
You too. And thank you so much for this opportunity to share with you and your audience, Alexandra.
Likewise. Thank you all for listening and stay tuned for more updates with inspiring female role models.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of FemLead Podcast. Share the news with your friends and follow us on social media at FemLead Podcast everywhere.